Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to episode 63 of the AI Comic Pod. We are here to, as usual, produce something quite spontaneous. This is a podcast about the evolution of Spider-Man. And we're talking about the evolution of Spider-Man a little bit in games, but more in terms of film. Not really in comics, because the comic level of Spider-Man has been going since the 40s, 50s, maybe earlier, something crazy. And it's very hard to know where to go without one of the key experts, which would be probably Joey.
Just 1962.
Okay, so 60s, yeah. But there's obviously been a lot of incarnations, a lot of changes, lots of developments. And then there's also been a lot of animation TVs and various things over the years. Spider-Man is the kind of household character of comic bookness, along with Batman. And it's been something we've kind of discussed, but not, you know, we talked about Homecoming, obviously, and we've talked about Spider-Man in recent years. We've never gone back to look at any of the old films, especially Spider-Man 3. And
I did. I went back and watched them all before Homecoming came out. And okay. I even managed to sit right the way through Spider-Man 3.
Even that dance. Even the dance scene.
Even the dance. I sat through it. I'm not saying I enjoyed it, and I'm not saying it didn't make me violently, physically sick, but I still watched it all. And, you know,
you have watched Green Lantern. You did also revisit Daredevil, the film adaptation.
Yeah.
So you have a tendency to, penchant to watch such shitness, I'd say, at times. Just
I've got a very, very high tolerance for shit comic films.
Which, yeah,
I've
you
got
really
a really
do.
Low tolerance for shit films in general.
Yeah, it's some, I'd say, shit comic book TV adaptations as well, because you're quite generous. You know, you keep with things, even though everyone else doesn't.
Well, I've watched the whole of season 2 of Legion, and I haven't enjoyed a single episode of it.
See, that's quite impressive. I haven't watched the series yet, because I was kind of...
I wouldn't bother. Put it this way, yeah. Joey gave up on it, and Joey's the one that got me into it, because
Legion's
such a good character. Don't bother, I will not be watching season 3. It's been
no,
wanky.
Which for you, I mean, look, you've stuck with Arrow for all these years, and let's be honest, it's really gone off the boil. Even the Flash series 4,
Flash
is
lovely. Grant Gustin's a handsome devil, and I love them all.
I couldn't after the cabaret episode, I really struggled, I'll be honest. Just point out that. There is a couple of things. Did you ever watch, and I know we're just randomly off subject, and we always do this. Did you ever watch the Runaways?
No, I didn't. I didn't bother with Runaways or...
I might watch that. There's a new thing on Amazon Prime called Cloak and Dagger, which I think
I've watched the first two episodes of that. They did a double...
Any good?
It's really good. But what they've done is they've flipped it on its head. They've changed the origin to make it a bit more TV. Accessible. And what they've done is, do you remember Agent Carter?
Yes.
Do you remember the dark force that they brought in?
Yeah.
They get their powers from that.
Okay.
So
that makes it more.
They've changed the origin to link it into sort of existing Marvel TV. And they've changed cool. around the order of them. So they've made the white girl the one that's not very well off and the black kid the one that lives with the nice suburban family.
But the one thing I've been watching lately is The 100, really, because you got me into that, which...
Yeah.
For anyone who doesn't know about it, I don't know what network. Is it a CW show?
It's CW, yeah. It's a CW original.
It feels like a CW show, let's be honest. It's got that kind of...
It's teeny.
It's got that teeny pop kind of vibe to it. It's
there was a really good,
I said
really
to you, it's like a very
90s.
It's like a 90s.
It's like Dawson's
kind of,
Creek in the jungle.
Yeah, there was a thing, it might be an Australian called The Tribe back in the day that I watched when I was a kid. And that was kind of post-apocalyptic where the younger kind of generation took over.
To
and
me,
it feels a bit like that.
It's basically Lord of the Flies with millennials. But they've obviously got no avocado and no Instagram.
No, I think they'll find avocado at one stage or another. There was a moment I've been watching where the key character turned her hair red for an episode, and it was like going through a punk, you know, by curious phase, which was quite intriguing.
When you said about CW shows, there was a brilliant line in Supergirl, I think it was season one, where Cat Grant made some kind of a comment. It was along the lines of the three of you standing there is like the inoffensive lineup of a CW show. Because at the time, Supergirl wasn't on the CW.
No, it wasn't.
Before they brought it into the fold.
Anyway, that's a little bit of what we've been watching. And we're a little bit in between films, aren't we? Because we've reviewed Deadpool 2 and... I haven't yet to see Solo. You're not going to see it, I don't think. You have to see the
Jurassic
big dinosaurs.
World, yeah. Fallen Kingdom tomorrow. I'm not bothering with Solo because it doesn't feel like a Star Wars film at all.
No. Infinity War, we must say, is still rumbling on past the $2 billion mark worldwide, which is really cool. It should catch The Force Awakens and come into third place.
It's only a few hundred grand. It might only be $100,000.
It's quite astonishing, though, mate, how much Avatar and Titanic did in retrospect.
I can't believe Avatar did 2.7, and it's just the fucking Smurfs.
It's the Smurfs in Wakanda, essentially. It's bizarre when you look at it from that perspective. I think it's who goes to see films, because Avatar was one that basically got the whole audience scale. Do you know what I mean? Like everyone and their mum and dad and everyone went to see it. Whereas I think Infinity War maybe has a slightly lesser reach, but still, I mean, it's a seriously impressive thing because
it's actually 66 million behind Force Awakens.
Yeah, that'll happen. And I think the other thing to mention is that it's obviously a huge franchise. It's been going for years and years, but it might just do it again next year. You know, I think everyone will roll out to see Infinity War or Avengers 4.
Well, you'd think everyone that's seen the first has got to see the second.
Well, yeah, exactly.
They made no secret of it being a two. While we're on gross in films, if you adjust films for inflation, as of 2016, have a guess at what the top grossing film would be.
As of 2016?
Yeah. If you adjusted all film income.
Wouldn't it still be Avatar, no?
No. Gone with the Wind.
I was going to say, it would
be
$3.6
billion. if you adjust Avatar, it would be 3.1.
Wow. There you go.
Gone with the Wind, that's crazy. But then the rest of them, Avatar, Titanic, then the original Star Wars would be in fourth. Then The Sound of Music, then E.T.
Stuff like that.
The
man.
Ten Commandments.
E.T. is huge.
Dr. Zhivago. Then Jaws would actually be in ninth with Force Awakens at 10.
I think the people... Jaws was just huge, man. The thing is, like, films of that era used to run and run and run. So they're probably... It's like The Greatest Showman. It's probably on the cinema for a year, it feels like, these films. Because they just get this audience. And, I mean, something like The Greatest Showman. And I'm kind of proud of Hugh Jackman because he's doing what he wants to do. You know, he's earned the right for me to do those kind of films if that's his choice. Do you know what I mean? Because he loves all that jazz. So it's kind of fair enough. And stuff like that just rolls and rolls and rolls. And then they do the whole, you know, outdoor cinema stuff. And then they do the whole sing-along cinema stuff. It's like these films never end. Do you know what I mean? So you've got to give them a bit of credit for that. It's quite astonishing. And yeah, films used to do that. And I think Infinity War and Black Panther have had kind of incredible runs in terms of length of time at the box office. I mean, not since Avatar, maybe Force Awakens. I mean, The Last Jedi didn't last that long for me at the cinema. It died out a lot quicker than expected. I mean, it didn't do badly, don't get me wrong, but it didn't stick around, you know what I mean? So it's pretty epic feat. So, and talking of films that did pretty well, let's be honest, is the original Spider-Man trilogy. The figures for those, especially Spider-Man 3, I think, and maybe 2, were pretty astonishing at the time.
They were, when you think that they're some of the films like the original X-Men films, which don't really get the credit that they deserve, because they really kick-started the mainstream.
Like, I think you'd say Spider-Man 1 was the kind of catalyst for maybe where we are now in terms of those films, like X-Men as well, do you know what I mean?
But if it wasn't for those films, if it wasn't for Sam Raimi, you know, the MCU in the way we know it, with the formula it's got, might not have existed, or it might not have come around when it did, because they showed people that you can really make high budget, CGI heavy, you know, action filled, but really impactful and emotive superhero films. And a lot of people probably never would have imagined that. I mean, Spider-Man, like a lot of characters, can be perceived as being quite slapstick because of like some of the cartoons and the way he's being perceived as a bit of a joker, and because he's only a kid or a very young adult, whatever. But
Tobey Maguire.
But it made $821 million worldwide, and that's in 2002. So if you update that now, I mean that's got to be I don't know, what, 1.5 billion.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe. I mean,
that's got to be sort of not quite Infinity War, but
Well, according to IMDb, the first one only did 400 million worldwide.
Really? I'm looking at the thing now and it says 821.7 million worldwide. It was the third highest grossing film of 2002.
Okay, that's interesting. Okay, maybe I'm looking at the wrong thing. Because it's got Spider-Man 2 is 783.
Oh, and Spider-Man million. 2 was a brilliant film.
And then Spider-Man 3 dropped off a little bit. But Spider-Man 2, is the pinnacle of those original trilogy, because
without a shadow,
it's got the best villain.
Yeah.
Mile.
What's his first name? Thingy Molina.
Alfred Molina.
I was thinking Albert.
Who plays Doc Ock. And
I just think
everyone in that, to be honest, J.K. Simmons.
J.K. Simmons is brilliant. He's absolutely brilliant. He's just one of those archetypal pieces of casting. He's not on screen as much as he could have been, but when he's hilarious, because he just captures J. Jonah Jameson for what he is, an absolute dick.
Exactly.
You know, Spider-Man could carry someone out of a burning building, and his instant thought is, well, he must have started the fire. And and that's what he's always been like in the comics, which is actually really funny, because in the recent Spider-Man comics, Peter's actually revealed his identity to him, and he's now full of remorse. He can't believe that he spent years trying to tear this guy down, and at the heart of it, he was a kid. And it's so funny. He's really, really remorseful. He's like, I spent, what is it, about 8 years trying to ruin you, and you were just a child. And after like 50 years of being on his case, he's now actually an ally.
I think another one to mention in those films as well, and people often look at the main characters, they don't always look at everyone else, but Rosemary Harris, British actress who played Aunt May, May Parker, I thought she was a bit like, you know, when we talk about, we talked about the original Batman butler, original Alfred in those films. I can't remember who the actor was.
No idea.
No, but do you remember we talked about, and we're just saying that, they're kind of really pivotal when you think back about it. I can't see, if you mention Aunt May, I can't see anyone else but her. Do you know what I mean? And she is a pivotal character for me. Like, she is, you know, you need, there's always a senior figure in these films, and it's just natural to have that. And I think we said a little bit with Homecoming that maybe that's the one thing they didn't quite get right for me is the Aunt May, young Aunt May kind of approach to things. I just don't think she's that believable in a lot of senses. Do you know what I mean? So,
I'm not complaining about that for obvious reasons.
Yeah, I thought you might say that, but,
I am not alone in thinking that. There's a lot of people who appreciate Aunt May. I'm just looking through the,
including Tony Stark himself, you know? So,
Tony Stank's a dog though. I'm just looking through it was Michael Goff.
It was Michael Goff who was legendary Alfred back in the day.
How much did you say Spider-Man 3 had made?
Well, it's on mine, according to IMDb, it was like 560 or something.
I must have gone past it, but 1 and 2 made something 820 for the first one, and then the second one was something like 700 odd. So you're talking, you know, 1.5 billion in early 2000s money. So
yeah,
the whole franchise in itself probably made about 2 billion.
It's not just the fact that they're huge, obviously, and obviously that's a factor, but it's the merchandise element of it. It's bringing superheroes back into the fore. Do you know what I mean? Because before that, it was probably Star Wars toys in the 80s kind of element, and then rebooting Star Wars wherever possible. And
yeah.
I don't know what else, you know, there wasn't the commercialization of stuff. You know, there was obviously toys and animated films and stuff, but nothing of the scale of that. And I think when Spider-Man came back into it, you know, what do we realistically, and you're very anti Tobey Maguire, aren't you? I think
I'm, yeah, I really, 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 I can't even think of another way of like,
man, he's so old.
That's one of the reasons I don't like him. He's like when you see people like, what's his face? The guy that plays Jim Gordon in Gotham.
Oh, God. The OC guy.
Yeah, the OC guy. He's playing like a 17-year-old. And at the time, I'm sure he was about 28. And you're looking at it going, really? You're in high school?
He's got a ridiculously deep voice as well. Do you know what I mean?
It looks like he was born 40. It's like he probably came out smoking with a brandy in one hand and, like, you know, the New York Times.
Benjamin Button. Yeah, yeah. It doesn't quite fit. I agree.
Spider-Man 3 made 890.
Jesus.
So for the three of those films, by 2007, they'd made about 2.5 billion. So in current money, you're probably talking about 6 or 7 billion. I mean, that's the sort of money that
the MCU
has made. I
don't know if you quite work in normal economics, but they definitely made a decent chunk of money, you know?
Well,
I don't think inflation's gone up 3 times, mate, in that time. But, you know, it feels like it has. Going to the cinema now, if you go to a normal IMAX, it's 17 quid or something horrific. It wasn't 17 quid back in 2002.
Well, you think how much the MCU's made off Infinity War, Black Panther, and Ragnarok. That was something like, now that's probably four billion.
Yeah.
Something along those lines. So, I mean,
it's got to have made the similar amount, exactly.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's got to have made a similar amount to that. And the thing is, the big problem is, I think
the reason why they're sort of forgotten is because it just ended so abruptly, because you had
one,
and then 2 years later you had two, and then 2 or 3 years later you had three, and then everything just ground to a halt and stopped. And it just completely went cold, and then all the rumours started coming out about what Sam Raimi had planned for four, where supposedly he was building up to something along the lines of the Sinister Six.
It's a little bit Nolan-esque, isn't it, with the Batman trilogy, where it was three films and then it ended, and kind of they dropped the ball with it, because, you know, the momentum and the money being made was there to kick on and produce more. And then for a good period outside of maybe X-Men, Until obviously Iron Man came along, there was not much in the way of superhero stuff. People weren't. It did kickstart. It gave the opportunity for Iron Man to exist, didn't it? Do you know what I mean? Because I guess Iron Man came out in 2008, which was a year after Spider-Man 3, so it was obviously in the works. And you know, you look at it, but I just don't think that would have happened. And
it was probably the momentum that they saw from one and two made the various parties realize, look, this is something that we
definitely would have been.
Do.
It definitely would have been two, because I still think your figures are out on one. Two made loads of money. Two was one of the highest grossing films.
821 it made. That's what it says on IMDb, and that's not adjusted. That's its actual. What you were looking at was the domestic. It made 400 odd million domestic.
Yeah, that's what I looked
worldwide.
At. Yeah. Wow. Okay. So, you know, those kind of figures are pretty astonishing.
Not
really,
to be sniffed at. And when you, I was
thinking
about
huge,
it before.
Man.
Think now, all of the incarnations of Spider-Man in the last 20 years.
Yeah.
Had three Maguire films, two Garfield, one Holland, but then he's appeared in two others.
Yes,
so we've
he has.
Now had eight appearances of Spider-Man. That's like Batman levels. That's Superman levels. There's no
eight appearances in 25, 26 years.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Not in 25 years, in 15, 16 years. So that's insane. So it's basically an appearance every 2 years, basically. So,
and what does that sound like? That's the kind of numbers that the MCU goes for. It's to keep people in there, to keep it in your mind, so that you don't forget about
even if it's not necessarily positively. And I'm gonna, you know, I think you're right with Maguire. I think there's times when it worked, and I kind of liked his and Kirsten Dunst's relationship.
Don't
what I liked,
bring up her.
Oh, you really
you know
like
my
it,
thoughts on Kirsten Dunst.
There's so many you don't like, though. I can't talk about Portman. I can't talk about Dunst.
Well, it's not my fault that they're incredibly wooden and talentless. You see this table? Well, you obviously can't see it. But this table, that's got about as much personality as Kirsten Dunst. And I also scared Wilson, who just shit himself because he was asleep next to me. Sorry, buddy.
Oh, that's mean.
But no, I must admit, as much as I don't like her, there were moments when she wasn't singing.
Bad. Again, the other characters in it, you've got Willem Dafoe is a really good villain as a Green Goblin. Yeah, because he's such a sadistic fucker. He's such a great actor.
If anyone
and then
in
Franco
the real
was
world,
great in those films as well, man. I
if
really
anyone
like
in the
Franco
real world was going to be the Green Goblin, it probably actually would be Willem Dafoe.
Yeah,
he really looks like he's deranged.
Yeah, yeah. I've just seen the Joe Manganiello. Thompson.
He should have taken Sofia Vergara's name because it'd be so much easier.
God, it would. Franco as well, man. Franco was great, and I really liked Franco in those films.
For
he was
sake.
Probably.
Do you know what Michelle's just done? She sat in the living room. She's just texted me a picture of Kirsten Dunst crying. You bastard.
Nice. I think they kind of got a lot right in those films. I think the third one, oh my God, it just went so wrong. It just went so, so badly wrong that it was quite forgettable. And I think everyone felt like they needed a break from Spider-Man. And then.
Have you seen some of the things they planned for four? They had They had John Malkovich was in negotiations to play Vulture.
He'd be a good Vulture, man.
And then
that made sense.
They had Anne Hathaway in negotiations to play Black Cat.
Yeah, that's obviously logical. Yeah.
Which would have made a lot of sense. And then that was confirmed by Sam Raimi in 2013 that she was going to be Black Cat if it had ever been made. But Sony pulled the plug on the whole project because Sam Raimi withdrew from doing Spider-Man films, and presumably they didn't want to take, as we've seen with other things, Superman films. They didn't want to take someone else's script that was half-baked, give it to another director and say, right, do whatever you can with that.
No.
And by then, you know, he pulled out in 2010. So by then the MCU had started, and maybe Sony sort of realized, well, we've lost a little bit of momentum. And it's going to be really difficult for us to compete because by this point, 2010, Iron Man's been released and Iron Man raised the bar so high.
Yes, it did.
And maybe they just thought, you know what? I don't think we're quite at that level yet. We need to just take a few years out.
I mean, Sony are notorious for not always making great decisions. I think that's the politest way of putting it. I mean, a lot of people have high criticism of Sony over the years for what they've done, certain franchises, and particularly, you know, Spider-Man and what they've kind of messed about with rights and holding on to stuff. And I think, you know, we will come to it, but obviously they've come to an agreement with Disney and it's all for the better because it benefits everyone.
And it's one of the most sensible things that they've done in a long, long time. Just,
well, especially when you look
as well to accept somebody else can do your thing better than you can. But as we've said at the time when we first talked about the agreement, let's not kid ourselves. They've looked at it and gone, right, well, Marvel basically print their own money. They want to use our character and they want to print some money for us. Okay, it's not like they've done it for artistic reasons or because they believe in the vision. They've done it because they get money for nothing, for literally nothing. So why not?
No, but Homecoming is a Sony-produced film, mate. So it isn't a Disney film.
No, I know, but it's done in conjunction with them, and they will Disney will definitely be pulling the reins, won't they? They've brought in Kevin Feige to oversee the whole thing.
They've obviously overseen it, but it's still a Sony-produced film. So it's Sony's budget, it's Sony's, you know, choice of production and director and stuff. So obviously there will be conversations had, but I think it's a hugely positive influence that Feige and Disney have had over Sony for producing that film. But in fairness, Sony have stepped up on that. And I think we've got to hope that what's coming next from them will do the same, because the what's coming next is not connected with MCU. Do you know what I mean? It's not in the MCU as such. So we're going to have to see what comes. And we'll talk about those shortly. But, I mean, we had a couple of films in between.
I'm one of the minority who actually really liked them. I thought they...
Don't tell me the second one's good. It's not. No, it's a terrible film.
The second one's not good. I really like the first one.
I like the first one. I really like Emma Stone. Spider-Man. Emma Stone.
That's one of the major reasons. Because those two were a real couple, their chemistry on screen was incredible. And Emma Stone...
Garfield is baby-faced enough to pull off the character.
And he's goofy enough to be a convincing Peter Parker. I always said Garfield was the better Parker, but they used too much CGI on his Spider-Man. He looked
way too heavy on the CG.
It's like he had no bones. He used to bend in half. So the combination of the two, you know, you'd have Maguire's Spider-Man and then you'd have Garfield's Peter Parker.
I think you're right. I think the action on the original Spider-Man was what kind of stood it apart a little bit. I think there's obviously issues around Tobey Maguire's portrayal of Peter Parker, but I think as a Spider-Man, they nailed that side of it.
Yeah,
do you know
absolutely.
What I mean? They really nailed that side of it. And I think that was the issue with this film is actually it's in reverse. He's an effective Peter Parker. He's a likable Peter Parker, but he's a shit Spider-Man because it's just, they had the wrong team in. You know, when we look back to Iron Man 1, like you said, it's the production team were right. Do you know what I mean? The CG was really effective. And I think you've seen with Jon Favreau that Christ, that guy knows how to produce, you know, CGI films. He's great with CG. You look at the Jungle Book remake they've done and anything of his, any moments, even in the like lesser films, he's still got great CG input into them. But that is so crucial in these films. It wasn't right. You know, it really didn't hit as an action film. It missed those kind of boundaries, you know, especially the sequel.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Terrible, yeah, terrible villain.
I was confused about it when they first announced that Jamie Foxx was going to play him. And I like Jamie Foxx, but I couldn't see in my head how they were going to make him into Electro. And yeah, it wasn't much better when they actually did it. The best thing about that, about the second film, was the conflict that Peter had, because he'd made the promise to Gwen's dad that he wouldn't get her involved in the whole thing. That side of it was very interesting. And I like the fact that they killed her off at the end in the true comic book style, with the neck snap and it's technically his fault. And that, a lot of people don't realize that was almost panel for panel taken from a very famous comic from
probably... No, they were brave in it. Don't get me wrong. They were brave in it, but they went about it. That second film is a car crash for me. It had moments
going on. Like they didn't need to bring in the baby goblin right at the end for literally minutes.
They really didn't.
Suit, and the one thing that I'm annoyed about that they didn't get
Dane
to pay off.
Dane DeHaan's quite an interesting, quirky actor.
Do you not think he looks like an underdeformed fetus?
He's certainly interesting.
He's an interesting looking. That'd be a bit mean to say what I was going to say. He's an interesting looking gentleman. I was going to Steve bomb him, but that seems a bit weird. He's not like offensive or anything, but the best scene, actually, to tell a lie in that whole thing, was when they go downstairs in Oscorp and they've got all the mechanical suits, and you can see they've got the Doc Ock suits and the vulture wings.
Yeah, they hinted at so much cool stuff, you know. They really did.
They made no secret. Amazing Spider-Man 3.
They never made a secret.
And then, Jesus, Paul Giamatti as Rhino in that awful cybernetic suit, where he's literally a transformer with a...
Right, Paul Giamatti's a really good actor, right? He's a very different actor, and he's very unique in his style. He does not suit action films in any way, shape or form.
Certainly not as if they've gone to him and gone, right, think of the most stereotypical Russian actor you can think of. There you go, that'll do. And
oh my god.
And he must have been in his 40s, because he's 50.
He's in his 40s.
When was that made?
He made a few years ago, man. He's late 40s.
Right, that would fuck off. 2014. He was 47 years old. Good god. I hope he fired his agent. Because Rhino's a brilliant villain.
The guy is a great villain. He's Billions is a really commercial success story on TV, and people love that film, love that TV series. And he's done some really good film, like Sideways and various. And he's a unique actor. He's also done a very terrible Christmas film where he plays Father Christmas. I can't remember who else is in it. Tall actor, quite annoying, always hangs out with Owen Wilson. Vince Vaughn. That's terrible too. And I think that was around the same era. So I hope he's fired his agent, because I think he was doing stuff for a quick payday. This being one of those things. And you're right. This film and para films are quite forgettable. And the first one has some redeeming features, but.
Before we entered the Holland era.
Reese Evans as well, we had as the lizard, didn't we? I don't think the CG on that was very good.
Amazing Spider-Man was my second favourite Spider-Man film after Spider-Man 2. I think
Spider-Man 1's better than...
For me, it's all about Doc Ock. They did the perfect blending of making him...
Oh no, Spider-Man 2 was the best.
Close enough to be...
I still rate Spider-Man 2 maybe above Homecoming, you know. Spider-Man 2, Doc Ock was just so good, man. Just so good. Homecoming is obviously a very different style of film and a much younger. It's a CW show put onto to screen almost with a lot better direction and humor, but it's cool. But Spider-Man 2 is absolutely epic. So we'll move on because there's quite a lot to talk about with our current incarnation, and we've waxed quite lyrical about Tom Holland. We love the actor. We love that he's put so much into it, and you could see from the promotional stuff he's done how much he wanted the part. He was desperate for it. I love his story about him and the Punisher. I can never remember his actor's name. John Bernthal.
Yeah.
They went through lines and did a promotional thing they had to send. And it's cool that they're kind of connected and not, do you know what I mean, in the MCU in one way or another, which is kind of cool.
Love the way in his audition, they said something like, oh, well, in this scene, Spider-Man was gonna do a flip in, and he goes, well, do you want me to do a flip? And they went, what? And he went, I'll do a flip if you want. So he runs off stage, comes in and does like this flip, lands, and then starts reading lines. And the people were looking at each other going, did he just flip? Because he's a trained dancer and gymnast.
Well, and he was Billy Elliot, I believe, on stage.
Yeah, he did Billy Elliot
came
for
to
a while
recently. So he's obviously very gymnastically ballet kind of trained to do such a part. But he wasn't always good at gymnastics. I mean, even during those theatrical stuff, he trained insanely hard before Spider-Man, he even got the part, like you said. And now, you know, there's footage of him in the child's hospital and he's doing backflips. Oh my God. One of my favorite parts about Homecoming is when the guy says, hey, you're Spider-Man, and you do a backflip.
Do a backflip.
Yeah.
You're that spider guy off YouTube.
Yeah, exactly. I love that part because it was those kind of parts in Homecoming.
And that's just him.
Real hard.
The stuff when he goes into the hospital, because a lot of them do that. I mean, we know Chris Pratt.
No. We've seen a great moment with Tony Stark, with Robert Downey, when he goes into hospital and presents
with the
bionic arm.
And
it's
red and gold. That is insane. But when Tom Holland does these, I think it feels a lot more because he's so young.
He is young, and people relate to him. He goes in and they ask him how old he is, because they've all got a crush on him.
There was one, wasn't
there,
where the kid's mum says, how old are you? And he's like, I'm
18 or 19.
Yeah, I'm 18. And she goes, he's only like 8 years older than you. And you can see this kid's eyes light up. And like you say, he's doing flips and he takes off the mask. And there was one, he's showing someone how he uses the web shooters. And he's like, well, if I go like this, you can't do it now. I've run out of fluid. And he's awesome. And it still boggles my head that he is Dom Holland's son.
Quite get around that, because Dom Holland is a really funny guy. He always is the type of guy that would be on the right stuff on Channel 5. That's a very British thing, if you don't know what it is, if you've got no job or a student for a while. It's this crap newspaper reading kind of debate show on a every morning. He's a stand-up, but yeah, he is a stand-up kind of. He reminds me of the guy who wrote Yes Man. He's on Radio X now. Danny someone or other. Danny Wallace. It's that kind of. You know, he did a voice in Assassin's Creed, by the way. Danny Wallace. I remember.
And it's a likeness as well.
Yeah, it is. It's that kind of, you know, the kind of entertainment personality, kind of low level, you know, like Dom Jolly without the comedy. Although it's not that funny either. And there's those kind of people. I've just mentioned three people that nobody outside of a small part of the UK would know. Yeah. So for international audiences, you have no fucking clue what we're talking about.
But you really should.
Well, not so much. But yeah, his dad's not the most attractive. He's got that kind of under a bridge goblin kind persona.
Huge for hair.
Yeah, that too. And obviously, Sun is an attractive kid. He's very popular with
mystery
ladies.
Solved. Tom Holland's mum is fit.
Yeah, I wondered. That makes a lot of sense. And he's got like a younger brother, Tom Holland, because his brother must be like, oh my God, my brother's amazing.
My brother's fucking Spider-Man.
He's living the fucking dream, man. He's Spider-Man and he's hanging out with all these people. And I mean, the scenes in Infinity War, you know, when he's standing on Titan and he's looking at Chris Pratt and looking at Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah.
That feels to me like his real face. Do you know what I mean? When he's on set, he must be going, oh my God.
Keep it together. We know there was parts of the film that were improv. Like, of course, the infamous Why is Gamora? That was improv by Dave Bautista. That scene, that reaction, I believe, is just his face. He was stood there while those two are riffing on each other, you know, and he's like, that's a really good plan, apart from it's crap. And apparently he just smirked and they just left it in because he thought, well, he would. He's like 16 years old. He's with a half alien, half god. He's with Tony Stark, his hero, the Iron Man. And they're arguing about who's got the bigger plan, Dick. Of course he'd be smirking going, what's going on? I don't understand.
Yeah, he would be. It's obviously, you know, it feels like what his reaction would be.
Well, I put some polls out before.
He plays that so well. Go on, hit with the polls.
I did some polls before. They still run until tomorrow, but I think they'll finish how they are now. So I asked people for their first, second, and third favourite of the three Spider-Man. Tom Holland is currently crushing the favourite, 84% of the votes. The second one is actually quite close. Tobey Maguire's got 38. Garfield and Holland have both got 31.
Okay.
And then it's a bit more clean cut for the least favourite, where Andrew Garfield's got 52, Tobey Maguire's got 40, and Tom Holland has got 8, which based on the number of votes is only maybe 2 people. So whoever those people are, you should be ashamed of yourselves. you're terrible people, and you're probably
dead. There's obviously some recency kind of not bias necessarily on a poll like that, but it's, you know,
it's a psychological theory of primacy and recency. We tend to have more fond memories and better recollections of the first things that we saw and the most recent ones.
But
I
can't
put
out my head Spider-Man 3. I can't get out of that dance in Spider-Man 3.
Emo
not leaving
fucking
my...
Peter. With yeah. Because, of course, you go through a change. What do? You comb your fringe a little bit differently. You put on guy liner and you strut down the streets. And, of course, women see that and go, oh, my God, you're so fit, rather than, you twat. What
are you doing? You know, they would think, who is this dickhead? Do you know what I mean? You wouldn't.
They're the kind of people that you cross the road to get away from, and then you go over and tell people, oh, my God, you should have seen this weirdo.
Yeah, I mean, when we were introduced to Tom Holland in Civil War, I think we knew what we were going to get a little bit. You know,
he's just a human puppy.
Yeah, it's just such a likable presence and this kind of innocence. And they've done that throughout with Homecoming as well. And I love the start of Homecoming when they go back to Civil War.
The behind the scenes.
And it's him, you know, handicamming the whole thing at the beginning. And I just think it's so good. Because it's what you feel he would do. Do you know what I mean? It's what you think Peter Parker would do.
Yeah.
When he got to meet people, and it just feels so effective, and Tom Holland just plays it so well. And I think what surprised all of us a little bit, maybe in this recent film, is he's got emotional range, you know? I mean, this is a spoiler alert for anyone who's not seen Infinity War. I mean, shame on you. Go and watch it and make
those extra dead inside, millions horrible people.
Up. Yeah. But he obviously turns to dust in the arms of his father figure, who is now Tony Stark, his Iron Man. And it's improvised. The whole hanging on scene, whereas all the other ones just disappear.
Yeah.
He hangs on in that suit for those extra seconds.
And we said when we did our review that the bit that really makes that punch you right in the feelings is because he's got his spider sense. He feels, he knows that something big's about to happen. Everyone else just goes, I'm turning to dust. He feels it in his whole body.
Yeah.
So
it's a tough, and he apologizes to Iron Man, and that's just, I mean, Jesus yeah. Christ.
If and he looks like he's about to, but his bottom lip's going, isn't it? And you see,
you know,
it looks
for
like
me,
Downey
Jr. surprised
about
me.
To cry a
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, it honestly, and it has become this father and son relationship, and obviously the MCU is clearly built on parental issues.
God, it's the
with Star Lord and Gamora and everyone else. And it's important, and you know, you see that relationship. I mean, we talked about what helped with Homecoming, having that kind of experienced presence in Happy and in obviously Tony, and it really does make a difference. I'm intrigued to where they go next with Homecoming 2, because it is due for release. Is it next year? Or it's starting to film, isn't it? Certainly.
They start filming next month, apparently.
So it will be released next year. I know they're not announcing everything, but we know it's coming. And it is intriguing what direction they're going to go. And we've got other films coming from Sony in this guise. So we've got more from Sony to come. So we've got Venom, which we both really like the look of. We haven't talked the trailer on any pod yet.
But we will be closer to the time because it's only
we will certainly do a preview. Certainly do a preview on that one, actually. But I think it looks like a really cool 90s action film, and people seem to not like that. I think that looks cool. I like the whole motorbike stuff. It's a very 90s thing.
The effects look brilliant. The major thing is, right, that the graphics in Spider-Man 3 for Venom weren't terrible. They weren't that bad. The problem was, go and find a picture. Anyone who's not familiar with Venom from the comics, go and search Eddie Brock. Look at the size of him, and then look at Topher Grace. I'm slim, and Topher Grace makes me look like fucking Superman. He has got no reason to be like that. Because the whole idea is when the symbiote takes over Eddie Brock, he's this huge, like, upside down triangle, giant shoulders, huge barrel chest.
Yeah, and you wait till Carnage kicks in. It's just complete other level. Do you know what I mean? It's like, but Hardy's stacked, man. I mean, you know, everyone that's seen Warrior.
And he's not just stacked. He's rough.
Bane.
He always looked rough, he's just been beaten around the head with a 2x4 with nails in it, even when he's probably just had a shower. And that's what Eddie Brock's like. Eddie Brock is the kind of guy that sleeps in his clothes and just eats shit off the floor that he bought 2 days ago. Because he's just a bit of a bum.
I thought you were just going to leave that sentence halfway through. That would have been awful.
Well, there was a time in the comics when Venom used to eat brains. So, you know, shit off the floor, brains. It's a very thin line, isn't it?
It is. But, you know, and people are, you know, the cast is really cool. I mean, Riz Ahmed's in there as a kind of...
Riz Ahmed should be in all films ever.
Yes, I agree with that. And we talk about Michelle Williams as well and how picky she is. And
well,
honestly,
you've said several times, haven't you? If she picks a film, it's generally
based on
regarded
script
as a fan.
Yeah, she's very, very particular. And look, it might not be for everyone's taste. And a lot of people are already judging it from the Sony kind of perspective that they're going to balls it up and stuff.
Yeah.
And maybe they do, but I don't think they will. I think it looks interesting.
Have you seen
everyone
Woody
goes Venom without Spider-Man, what's the point? But you can't always do the same thing over and over again, you know?
Have you seen Woody Harrelson's in it?
Yes.
And they don't know who he's playing, but he's rumoured to be Carnage.
Yes.
Well, maybe not Carnage in this film. Maybe he's played as Cassidy, but towards the end or in a post-credit, he meets the Carnage symbiote.
It will be interesting.
I can see that because Woody Harrelson, again,
Woody is one of my favorite actors. He is one of my favorite actors, man. We've not had Woody Harrelson in any comic book adaptation, and he's just got such a personality that it really belongs in these kind of major films because he's done like Mockingjay and all those. He's in the latest Star Wars. He's in Solo and stuff. So he's been knocking around these things, and it's a good payday for him. Don't get me wrong, but.
Yeah. I think
he's
a
really cool
old.
Guy.
The one thing I want them
to do, he's a bit old.
Because he's 56. I mean, Cletus Cassidy is
Christ.
Probably late 20s, early 30s. The whole shtick with him, he's basically...
He might not be Carnage. You don't know.
He might not be. I'm hoping he's not. But in the comics, he's the closest thing I would equate to the Joker in terms of level of he's a genuine psychopath who does horrible things just because they're there. He will go on a murder spree because it's Tuesday.
It'll be interesting which way they go with it because this might be quite a mild, not heavy violent film.
But it's R-rated.
Well, there you go then. So I was going to say, if they do a sequel,
a rated R, they just don't know whether it's going to be a hard R or a soft R. Like,
I think it was soft.
Deadpool is hard R, isn't it? With full on decapitation and like body parts and, you know, putting fingers through wounds. Because one thing I always like about
tiny penises and crossing small legs. Yes.
At baby leg stew, which still might happen. I haven't ruled it out yet.
I don't think it's got the same effect.
No.
But, you know, I'd be a little bit disappointed one day if that happens. But,
with Venom symbiote just like comes around him like a, you know, like liquid. Yes. Carnage was bonded with Cletus Kasady's blood. So to release the symbiote, he had to cut himself. And there's this one panel, I've never forgotten it from the 90s, where he was in a prison van. And he's gone the full Hannibal Lecter. He's in a straitjacket. He's secured in a trolley. And they've got one of those iron grates over his mouth. And what he's doing is in the back of the transport, he's grinding his teeth together until he gets one of them sharp enough to a point. And then he just slices his tongue open. And then all hell breaks loose because the symbiote comes out. And that's the kind of thing that they can do if it's going to be R-rated. Because nothing's off limits. And Carnage is a psychopath. He will decapitate someone just because they looked at him. And that's, and with Venom now being very much the anti-hero, he can do the right thing, but he can kill people. So if he goes to break up a drugs bust, he won't be webbing them to the wall. He'll be impaling them and ripping people in half, and it can be bloody as shit. And that's why he's my favorite anti-hero at the minute, because it's one of the criticisms people have always leveled at Batman. Is the number one example. Batman knows that he could solve crime in Gotham if he crossed that line, but he's always said it's too easy to cross that line, whereas people like Venom go, line.
It's always interesting when you get a villain that literally doesn't know.
We did a pod about anti-heroes, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
We did one a while ago, probably in our first year, and that was one of the... And we looked at, obviously, Venom and Red Hood, and Punisher at the time was a big talking point, because I know he's one of your favourites. And again, same thing. Punisher sees a drug cartel and goes, well, if I mow them all down, they can't sell any drugs. Oh, well, I don't see a problem with this plan. Everyone's dead. Drugs are sorted. Let's go back home and have a coffee.
It's people that... It's crossing that line. I mean, you could say the same about Killmonger in recent films. You know, it's that he would be generally defined as an anti-hero because his methods are pretty unconventional.
A lot of people have said that they don't consider him to be the villain of the film. A lot of people have said, if anything, you could say T'Challa was the villain of that film because...
Yeah, but no, because ultimately... No, I don't. We've had this conversation. I don't think that's the case. But, you know, it's going to be interesting what happens with Venom and in future, because Sony obviously still have a lot pinned on this.
I'm very, very excited.
Yeah, I think if they get it right, and I hope they do, it's going to be good. And Tom Hardy very rarely puts a foot wrong. He's a really good actor. He's one of my favourite actors.
One thing that Sony have been very, very careful about at the minute is talking about how Spider-Man Homecoming universe and the Sony Spider-Verse, i.e. where Venom exists, how they overlap. Because everyone knows the origin of Venom. It bonds with Spider-Man first, although it's then been retconned, and apparently it bonded with Deadpool first. And that's why the symbiote is such an arsehole, because Deadpool completely screwed it up.
Wow,
which is fucking
sense.
And that's why Venom has got a Spider-Man look with the webbing and with the spider on his chest. They've got to find a way to explain that. And I think I said on one of our other pods, I think it might be, he maybe sees Spider-Man on TV and thinks, that's interesting. But at some point, the two have got to cross over.
They have. But then Tom Holland, complicated.
Does Tom Holland go R-rated, or does Venom go 15, PG-12, PG-13, whatever it would be?
It's a little bit like we said with Deadpool, if Disney own the rights and then changes the adaptation and the outlook and stuff of things.
They've got no plans on doing Deadpool.
It doesn't matter. You know, everything is, they can market it whichever way they want. It doesn't matter. They don't have to be the same every time, Disney. They know that. They'll always adapt to make money. That's the way they are as an organization. So, it will be intriguing which way it goes. I think the other big thing, and probably the main reason I wanted to talk about this, obviously there is a game which will be talked about on the One Up podcast.
Talking about for the last few days, we've got a group with some of the One Up people, and it's obviously E3. And yes. When the Spider-Man footage landed, we all just went like 13 years old, very giddy children.
I remember the Spider-Man games growing up, and they were always, there was a couple that were exceptionally good, and it looks pretty outstanding.
Did you ever play the one where you controlled four different Spider-Men and Edge of something?
Yeah, I did. Yeah,
because you got to Edge of Time and you got to play Spider-Man Noir, which was so good. It was normal Spider-Man, Noir, 2099, which is another one of the brilliant ones. And then I forget the bloody other one, but that game got panned. I loved it.
No, it was good. There's always been good Spider-Man games over the years. There really has. And the other big thing, and this is the other major thing, if not the most exciting thing for me, is a trailer dropped for Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, which is a Sony animation production. It's Sony's first film to be rated PG-13, which is quite interesting because it means it's going to have an edge to it.
Which you've got to. Spider-Man's got to have a bit of an edge, but he doesn't have to be too violent, too bloody. He doesn't really swear because he is always a young kid, and you know he's been brought up by quite a conservative Aunt May, so it fits with the mold, but he just needs that little bit of grit. Because he's obviously had a bit of a hard life with losing his parents and then the Uncle Ben stuff and what have you.
Yeah.
But then going into Miles Morales, a lot of people might not know, is a very, very recent character. He's only been done in, I'm sure it's something like the last 10 years. Let me quickly check when he first came out. 2011.
Yeah, exactly.
And
so
the whole shtick is, in Across the Multiverse, Miles Morales gets his powers a very similar way to Peter Parker, but in his universe, Peter Parker dies. He gets killed by the Ultimate Goblin, which is like their version of the Green Goblin. And Miles originally doesn't want to take on the role, but loads of people convince him that he has to do it as like a tribute to Spider-Man. So that they're going to have to look at the whole multiverse theory, and they call it the Spider-Verse in this, because the idea is in every universe there's a different Spider-Man, and
so you've obviously got Gwen Stacy, you've got Spider-Man himself, and Miles Morales, as you said, and there's a lot more to it. But the big thing that excites me is, Christ, it looks incredibly cool.
The animation style is
exceptional. It's not stop motion.
People slagging it off saying it doesn't look finished. What?
It looks perfect, man. Don't change it at all. People like everything to be really clean cut. And I haven't done a podcast about it yet, but I'm big on stop motion, and Kubo and the Two Strings, which I think I've recommended you to watch before, is stop motion by Leica, who were a film studio that do Coraline, and a couple of other films in that nature, and then Kubo, which came out a couple of years ago, and that looks incredible. And when animation looks incredible, it blows you away, because Pixar's really clean cut, and you've got different studios maybe just trying different styles. You've got films that cross over into live action and animation, like Scanner Darkly and stuff like that, and then you've got kind of Japanese manga and alternative, which is still super cool, looks really good. This looks like an amalgamation of several different styles.
Well, that's what I said
to
you, isn't it?
The cityscapes are incredible in this.
It looks like a West meets East blend of
it's
the
almost
animation
like
style.
Kind of Big Hero 6 style as well, a little bit. I mean, that's obviously a little bit cleaner because it's Pixar.
But that's still pretty high praise. If you can do an animated film that looks like Big Hero 6,
yeah, because they call it San Fran Tokyo or whatever it is. It's San Francisco meets Tokyo. So it's got that kind of West meets East style and the trams of the city like San Fran, and then the big high skyscrapers and neon of Japan. And this film's got that kind of obviously New York, you know, version of it, but it looks ace. And when he's, there's a couple of the shots that just blew me away. But it's got that kind of old school Batman, you know, the powers and the writing that comes out, like a little bit like Scott Pilgrim as well did that. But it's done it so effectively in the neon and the style that's done it. It looks great, you know, and it shows the spider senses by those little,
little lines,
which kind just of indicate like that he realizes Spider-Man and Miles Morales are the same kind of thing. They've both got spider senses.
And the way they've done that is a proper hark back to the old, like, Stanley Steve Ditko era when it was really...
Well, Ditko's involved as well in the writing, I think. Well, he's mentioned, but I don't know if he's just mentioned because they've taken the story. So the writers of this are Lord, I think from Lord and Miller, is it? Who's quite famous for the Lego.
Oh, Lord, yeah. Lord and Miller are both in it.
Yeah. Spider-Man's created by Ditko and Stan Lee, so I think maybe they just give him credit because
they need to.
And then Sarah Pacelli created Miles Morales, so yeah, fair enough.
No,
Brian Michael Bendis
created.
Yeah, there's Miles two Morales. Of them that are involved, I guess, so they're both on the writing credits. Okay, so Lord is the
Brian
one.
Brian Michael
Bendis
writer. Also created. Anyone you seen, Kov?
No.
Jessica
on,
Jones.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure he did. I think he came up
with the I can see Jessica Jones.
And that's one of his. Those two are two of the. Because he works for DC now, he's taken over Superman. They're two of the biggest sort of legacies that he's left with Marvel. I was wrong when I said before, I thought this was the one that Donald Glover was doing the voice for. It's not.
No, he's not. Nobody cast that you would maybe know.
There is.
Except Liv Schreiber.
Yeah, have you not seen who's doing Aaron Davis?
No.
Mahershala Ali.
Ah.
And yeah, Liev Schreiber as the Kingpin, which is a really good mix because he's got such
cool.
a booming voice.
Yeah.
Jake Johnson as Peter Parker. The only thing I know him from is New Girl.
Yeah.
And the kid that's doing Miles Morales, his name is Shameik Moore. Apparently he's a rapper. Half Puerto Rican, half American.
Oh, he's in Dope.
Oh, sorry, no, he's half Jamaican. It's Miles Morales, who's half
Puerto Rican. He's the kid from Dope, right. Dope is a good film that you would like. It's a kind of really cool film that came out a few years ago. And again, I'm all about cool films when they're done right, do you know what I mean? So, I love films that kind of cross genres and that's got a kind of a cool edge to it. This film looks... It looks amazing.
I've just found a little direct quote. Lord and Miller said, quote, they wanted it to feel like you walked inside a comic book.
Yeah, it's got that to it. It's certainly got that to it.
Because Miles has always been drawn a little... One thing I like about the Miles books is they've always been drawn a little bit more cartoony. You know, because they draw him the way you'd expect a kid to be drawn. You know, he's not like... There's a bit of a trend in superhero comics for the men are all hugely buff, barrel-chested.
And the women are obvious in terms of his depiction, he looks quite sort of sad.
Underdeveloped because, you know, he is only, I think when he takes over, he might only be 14 or 15. So he's a skinny kid, you know, he's a bit of a runt. And that's one of the sort of limitations he has. He's also got some really cool different powers. Like he can camouflage. Where he can go invisible. And he's got like these...
They've shown that.
And they've got these little bioelectrical impulses that he can let off and he calls it his sting. So like if he gets you in a headlock, he can zap you in the neck and it might knock you out or just really hurt really badly. So that they wanted to make sure that they didn't
It's cool as well, man.
It's Spider-Man,
always done
but
those
he's black
animation,
and young.
Animation series where you've got all the various different versions of Spider-Man over the years and stuff. And it's like... They've never done that in cinema, you know, and this seems like the best way of maybe introducing that. Obviously, it's hard to introduce a multiverse without overcomplicating things, and it's obviously got to be related to a younger audience as well as slightly older, you know?
Yeah. And it's a good way of doing it. He's one of the... We've spoken in the past about some of the transgressions that Marvel has done where they tried to change too much... All at the same time, you know, it was Girl Thor, Girl Iron Man, Black Captain America. There's been female Captain America because at one point Sharon Carter takes over. And a lot of those changes made sense, but a lot of people piled on Marvel saying they were pandering to, to pressure because they did them all at the same time. But Miles is one of the changes that's really stuck because it wasn't a change to Spider-Man. It wasn't getting rid of Peter Parker because it was an alternate version of him and it just worked. And then they did a brilliant book called Spider-Man where the two of them actually met. And they've done another one now, I think it was last year, called Spider-Man 2, where they meet again in the normal 616 universe. I think it was at the end of the first book they asked, well, there was a Peter Parker on my Earth. What about the Miles Morales on yours? So I think in the second one, they try and find out, like, if there's a Miles Morales, if there is, what he does, what he's like. I've not read it, but it's meant to be quite good. Yeah. So they've been really faithful to Spider-Man by saying, well, this kid isn't Spider-Man. He's just a Spider-Man, one of millions and millions. Like, anyone who watched the Spider-Man animated series, they did a Spider-Verse episode where it was when, I forget which season it was. It was the one where they had Madam Web and the whole season arc was she was training Peter for something. Do you remember?
Yeah.
And they called in, I think it was five different versions of him. And you had the one of him where he was running his own tech company and he's got the armored suit. You had the Peter Parker that was just an actor because he only played him on a TV show. And you had the one where he had the extra arms where he'd mutated and he was more spider than man. That was probably 95, 96. And even back then, they were looking at the Spider-Verse. And it's a concept that's been around in comics for decades. So it's nice to see them actually properly exploring this. On the big screen, the only time we've really seen this was, I think, Doctor Strange was the first mention of seeing all across the multiverse. So that was, you know, within the last couple of years was the first MCU mention we've had of it. But it's such a stable part of comic book, I don't know, history and mythology. And it's good that they're exploring it because by going into the multiverse, you open up millions and billions of new characters. Lots of them are probably going to be a bit crap and don't translate, but they've managed to pick on the one that really, really will. So, I mean, we both are massively excited about it, aren't we?
Yes. It's the kind of film that, you know, my boy was ready for Homecoming, but this film just looks like made for him.
So this is going to be a proper family event, this, because it's going to be clean. And with it being animated, you know,
it might have a slight edge to it in the right ways, you know, because he enjoyed Infinity War a lot and he's getting a bit older and he kind of likes that kind of stuff. So, yeah, to me, it just looks ace. I really love what they've done with it, and I'm never gonna get to this point in any career because I'm in the wrong bloody career, but if I was working on animation, or, you know, if it was my job, this is the kind of thing you'd want to be working on. Do you know what I mean? I look at this and go, yeah, this is the kind of thing I'd want to be involved in as an artist or a writer or whatever you were involved in this film, the production. It just looks cool. I love things that look modern. I have a big admiration for cinema that kind of pushes boundaries. And I think this film, yeah, I think this film's going to be spectacular. And, you know, all in all, Spider-Man is just going in the right direction, isn't it? We've been hugely praising Tom Holland and we're hugely praising of the kind of collaboration that Sony and Marvel have managed to do. To make this all work, and it's hopefully Venom and this animation are going to be really good, and we've got a pretty epic sequel to come for Homecoming, because as much as I loved Homecoming, you just felt like there is so much more to come from it. It was quite a limited action film in terms of what they did. Do you know what I mean? It was all about the development of the character from his Peter Parker side of things more than anything else. So you kind of want to see more of what Spider-Man can do. We got Iron Spider, but I think I'd like them to strip it back to being just Spider-Man. Do you know what I mean? Without that in the sequel, but you know, we'll see.
I've got a feeling when he goes back to it, he will, because
I mean, think it's not quite the same. I like that Iron Spider was involved and it made sense with him needing those extra kind of powers for what happened in Infinity War, but I'd like it to go back to the classic suit, you know.
Like, I think he will, because Spider-Man, very much like Iron Man, over his career he inherits huge number of suits for various different things. So it makes sense that when he's just doing his normal street level stuff, he can wear his normal, you know, still Stark tech, but the normal fabric suit.
Yeah,
and then he's got the Iron Spider suit for when it's Avengers time, when it's really world-threatening, global domination, aliens coming through a portal type level things.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting which way they go. And we don't know anything about it yet. It's quite a project that's going to be shrouded in mystery.
Although we do think we know we've got a villain.
Well, who's the villain? Because I don't know this.
Really? Jake Gyllenhaal as Mysterio?
Oh shit! Of course we do. Okay, yeah. See, I'm not sure how Mysterio is going to work, but Jake Gyllenhaal is a great actor. I'm all for him being involved. So yeah, that could be damn cool. And it'd be nice to maybe have a slightly unconventional villain in Spider-Man.
We've had
all the other ones over and over again, and we don't need Paul Giamatti's Rhino anytime soon. Or the Sandman. That was a really bad portrayal in number 3 as well, wasn't it? Spider-Man 3.
Yeah,
there's been a few over the years that.
Which is weird because Sandman himself isn't.
Oh no, it's pretty cool.
He's not the worst villain.
No, he's not.
But
they've
done Lizard, Doctor Octopus, they've done Green Goblin, Sandman, Venom, Vulture,
Rhino.
Technically Rhino, although he was literally in it for like 37 seconds.
It was too long.
So if you start breaking down like the big list of Spider-Man villains, if you were to look at his top 10, they've probably done 3/4 of them now. And one of the other ones that they can't really do is Kingpin, because Kingpin is now being heavily associated with Daredevil.
I don't see Kingpin happening. And it's maybe not quite the villain that would lead to a kind of action film in modern days. Do you know what I mean? It wouldn't make that much sense.
I couldn't see them doing Hobgoblin because people would get confused between Green and Hob.
Yeah, that's not gonna happen.
Do you know who I forgot? Electro. How could I forget Electro?
How could you forget Electro?
Do you know who I'd actually pick if they came to me and said, look, Stu, you know, you're this fountain of knowledge, this bastion of brilliant ideas. I would actually choose Kraven the Hunter, because Kraven is one of the most interesting Spider-Man villains, and he's involved.
Kraven is one of the characters outside of Mysterio that's never really been portrayed in any way. You know, and it would be interesting.
In the cartoon.
Yeah, exactly. Really popular in those things, but it's never really been done effectively. So, yeah, that's a good shout. It is a good shout.
And now, with all the information that they've got and all the experience and all the data that they must have now of, look, we know what people like. They like villains that have got an emotive backstory. You know, people are more gravitate more towards.
Yeah, they did well with Vulture, actually, in a lot of ways. You've got to say they kind of got that right.
I was a bit wary of that because I think Vulture's not one of the best, but they found a way to modernize it, to give it that twist.
They made it work. Yeah.
They gave him the backstory of.
And Keating is terrifying.
Yeah,
when bloody hell that moment when he realizes it's him, it's just.
When he's driving in the car and all of a sudden you see his really shifty eyes going.
Oh, you just know, and you just have that moment of fear.
Took him, they modernized him, and they gave it the little twist where he's a regular working everyday guy. And he's being crushed by the man, by Tony Stark. So you can see how he becomes the villain. The same way you can see how Killmonger becomes the villain. You can see why Thanos becomes the villain. You can see kind of sometimes why Loki does what he does. It's not just a villain for villain's sake. There's a legitimate reason behind it.
Oh yeah, it's always more effective when they've got motives that aren't just bullshit.
I'm a bad guy, I'm going to kill a load of people and do a load of things that are going to get the attention of a superhero. So, I mean, Mysterio's a hard one to do because he's going to be so CG heavy. But nowadays, with the technology that we've got, it will be a lot easier.
CG isn't a massive issue now. I think any character
that would have been off limits wouldn't
have worked. But yeah, it's going to be interesting which way they go.
Have you ever tried showing your lad the Spider-Man animated series?
We have watched bits on and off. Yeah, we have. So it will come back around, I think. So
are you a fan of it?
We've read Yeah, a little bit. He changes. He's just into gaming at the minute. So it kind of, with kids, man, they jump every 5 minutes. Spider-Man is the popular.
Just, some of us never grew out of that.
Big kids, man. It's just like, oh, look at this. It's shiny. Yeah,
it's not shiny things. It's colourful things. I grew out of my shiny phase at 32.
Yeah, when you had your magpie years.
I'm in my colour phase now. I'm officially at the same mental age as a toddler.
It was bound to happen eventually. It's only a matter of time. We are rattling on as always. But it's been cool. For something we didn't prepare. This may sound completely unprepared, but to us it sounded okay.
Considering you only pitched the idea on like Monday.
Even maybe yesterday.
Even by our incredibly low standards, this is really, really off the cuff.
Yeah, well, it's just been a bit hyped, and it was nice to talk about the new kind of animation trailer and obviously the game. And it's a big time for Spider-Man, you know, it is a big time. I think, resurgence.
The game looks filthy. The graphics on it. If you haven't,
the graphics are phenomenal.
Go and search on YouTube, go and search Spider-Man E3. Yeah. And they've got two different game demos. One of them is a full-on level. Well, the beginning of a level from the Raft, the super prison, where all the heroes are put on at the end of Civil War. And then there's another one where one of the developers is just web-slinging around New York. So you get a real feel for how it looks.
Everyone wants to do. Spidey. That's what you want to do. You want to control Spider-Man. You want to swing around New York. That's what everyone wants to do in real life. Do you know what I mean? That's the dream.
In the Batman games. Even in Arkham Knight, when I had the bat tank, I still preferred to get around the map.
Oh, I so much prefer to go out. Yeah.
Once you get the hang of the gliding, that shit is addictive. And on this, they've got the same way. You shoot yourself up really high, and then you can go into free fall and you drop like a bullet. But then at the last second, you shoot a line and you pull yourself away.
You're going to spend
at least the first hour just seeing how close you can get to the road without actually becoming a pizza.
Yeah, it's a big year. And Spider-Man is a big thing for Marvel. You know, it's a huge character, and it's going to be the future, really, because, you know, they're going to have to look at these characters moving forward as being the key ones when we move out of this phase of MCU and into the future.
And Spider-Man feels to me very much like he's been rejuvenated now, because we're in like our third Spider-Man phase, but now he's got his own films, he's folded into part of the MCU, and he's getting a video game, and he's getting animation. Really trying to get
well, and villains everything. Are getting spin-offs and all sorts, so yeah, it's a big deal.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's not many other franchises that could take a villain and give it its own film.
Sony would find a way, but yes.
And if anyone tries to mention this apparent Joker film to me, you will be stabbed.
Oh, don't. We're not. That's not for any conversation.
It's too late at night to be this angry. Otherwise, I'm just going upstairs and cry.
Do you know what? I don't believe, outside of Wonder Woman and the ones that actually are being made, like what's the guy, the big fish, Aquaman. Outside of those, I don't think they're actually making any. They're just all in development. It's just bullshit, man. They don't have a clue what they're doing at the minute. It's a fucking mess over there, I'd say. So, but that's another conversation. On that note, we will be back at some point with some spontaneous podcast quite soon,
unless you don't want us to.
Yeah, if you got any ideas as well, throw them that away. It's obviously Ant-Man versus a Wasp. We may touch upon and do a preview. I think we should, because Louise. Yeah. And it looks pretty good. Obviously, coming out in the States quite soon. We're a little bit later. We might also review The Incredibles, because why the hell not? Because it looks pretty awesome. And that comes out in July. So it's a superhero film. It's fine. We could do that.
It's already out, isn't it?
It's out in the States, maybe. We don't get it for a month.
I'm not sure if it's been properly released or if it's just like the press.
Yeah, we didn't get it for a month.
I've already seen a couple of videos for like no spoiler reviews.
Yeah, it's got really good ratings, like as good as the original. So it's pretty damn cool. So I will be seeing that probably a lot.
Well, you'll be going with the kids, won't you?
Yeah, exactly. But it'll be a lot of fun. But there's loads of good stuff coming out in summer. Ant-Man and the Wasp is the big release, but some good other genre stuff coming out as well. So cool. All right. Thank you very much, as always, mate. And thanks for everyone listening. And we will be back with you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.